This week on the Rockman Power Hour, we are joined by the road manager of the Ramones.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Monty A. Melnick is the guest on this week's Rockman Power Hour. Woo! I made a sound effect, Jason. Woo! It sounds like an owl, but at the same time, a woo girl. So, you know, I'm out for the night, but I'm drunk, you know?
Shouldn't you have just gone, hey, ho, let's go?
That's true. Oh, man.
I have to shoot you in the back now.
I want to be sedated after that delivery, you know?
All right, let's do it. Welcome back to the Rockman Power Hour, a podcast where we talk to the most interesting people in the world of pop culture. And this week on the podcast, we are joined by Monty A. Melnick. He was the road manager and tour manager of the Ramones for their entire career. And yeah, he's written a book called On the Road with the Ramones. And we're going to have him on the podcast. Ryan, you got this done. So
yeah,
hats off to you. This is amazing. Great, great job. What a pleasure to talk to this guy. And I think fans of the Ramones, fans of good storytelling, fans of rock and roll history, fans of early punk, new wave, all that amalgamation that happened in the late 70s are going to eat this up. So I'm excited about this. But before we talk too much about it, and we have to say eating up is not done without this.
No.
Heartbeat hot sauce.
Oh my God.
The heartbeat of the Rockman Power Hour. We absolutely love this stuff. And use our promo code ROCKMAN20 right below, and you will get 20% off your entire order. You can use that code as many times as you like. We were just on the phone with Heartbeat earlier this week. We were just talking about the next year and stuff. So many fun things coming down the pipeline with them. You know, they're involved with NASCAR. They're involved with UFC. They've got some rad comp collaborations coming, and we're going to talk about them on the podcast in the next year or so. Very, very excited to be working with them again for 2024. And I mean, dude, you know, the best. Awesome stuff.
The best of the best. And it's actually a conversation starter. I didn't even say, hey, this is something that sponsors our podcast. I just shared a Heartbeat post, and the amount of positive reactions I got from people saying, oh my God, it's my favorite hot sauce. I'm not even putting this on. There's legitimate fan base out there of people. There should be a Heartbeat hot sauce Comic-Con in a way, because people are big fans of this, and they should all come together and they should all geek out about how this hot sauce makes shitty food taste better, you know?
And that it does. Thank you again to our friends over at Studio House Designs. This is such a fun shirt. Oh, Green Room. I like that one. I like that one.
Yeah, people at first think it's Green Day at first.
Yeah. No.
But I'm like, no, this is a movie in which Patrick Stewart – listen, Patrick Stewart, you're an amazing actor, and you, you know, you headline the Royal Shakespeare Company, but when it comes to playing a redneck, you could you could take a look. You need to take some advice from Billy Bob Thornton, because it's just funny where it's just like, here's all these people of no teeth being like, yeah, damn, yeah, go and get these kids. And then Patrick Stewart, yes, back to the trailer, yes.
So that's a rad shirt, and I'm rocking the Freddy. Look at that.
Oh, yeah, that's so sick. Every single VHS.
As soon as spring comes, I'm going to be rocking this with my Bel Air Nightmare shoes too. Looking forward to the snow being gone. And thank you to Studio House Designs. Now, this I got to show you, because we don't get a lot of camera time with our producer, Julia Kajerski.
No.
But she is an integral part of our podcast. We couldn't get it going without her. We would both be just like twirling in circles if we didn't have her on the team.
Weeping, twirling around in circles, weeping, similar to Homer Simpson on the floor going, same shit. Yeah.
So I had the opportunity to get something made for her, and I wanted to surprise her.
Macaroni art.
No, the only problem, not macaroni art. The only problem was I had this made, and then when I pushed to add to cart. I added a small, not a large, so I can't wear it. But okay. I made this. This is where my friend Anthony over at Pushy Fist does these shirts that – you remember my June shirt?
Yeah.
Wow.
Incredible.
This is even cooler, dude.
What the fuck? Oh, nice.
So if you see this, you can go to Pushy Fist and you can add 5 photos of your significant other. And look, so I have all the Kajerski photos. So there's
the what, font.
Yeah. So there's Julia there. You could see her sneaking her beer in line at Morrissey. There's her having her cup of coffee our first day in LA together. There's her giving me the finger when we were at the after party at Arcade Fire because she wanted to go home. There's her grabbing a big piece of wood coming into our house. And there's just her beautiful photo. So this is
so many variants, but one smile. I love the Polish.
Exactly, right? They're all the Polish. It's all the same smile. You don't get too much of it, but when you do get it, it's kind of there. So
just zoom in on it.
So this is my Kajerski shirt, which I can't wear because it's small, but I'm gonna put it on June. And
You know what you could do though? You could cut it out. And then you could like sew it to like the back of a jacket or a vest.
I have the high res graphic of this.
Yeah.
I think I'm gonna make pillows for my living room and
well, you could put a pillow in there now, considering it's a small.
I might make a shower curtain out of it, coffee mug, bedspread, everything. So there you go. If you love your significant other as much as I do, you can go to Pushy Fist and you can get one of these made. So,
that's fucking awesome.
Isn't that awesome? You got to make a male one.
Yeah. Oh my God. There's so many. I would get Melissa and her various like movie roles, like her in Laserhawk and stuff.
Yeah. All that stuff.
Radioactive. Yeah. That'd be great. Or I could, you know, be tempted as I am right now to make one of me. And make her wear it. And,
I thought of that, but no, she sees enough of me. Anyways, all right. So let's talk about this guest because we had a chance to sit with Monty A. Melnick. He's very particular about the A. He wants the A in there. Mm-hmm. And Monty, of course, was like the guy on the crew of the Ramones. He was there from day one. He grew up, you know, with Tommy, and the guy just has stories for days, man.
Yeah. And sometimes you just got to let him go. And at the same time, you could see in this interview, me kind of totally fanboying, but at the same time, I'm like, you know, what's cool is that all this knowledge I've acquired through 20 plus years of Ramones fandom was finally useful.
Yeah.
And that's kind of cool. You know, like you always wonder what's this going to go? Why can't you remember math? Why do you know every drummer's name?
Yeah, well, it's like you've been this interview. Ryan has been training his whole life for, and this is going to be one that you're going to enjoy. So I don't even want to bog it down with you and I talking too much because there's so much great stuff in this. Without any further ado, check it out. Our conversation with Monty A. Melnick, the tour manager of the Ramones and author of the book On the Road with the Ramones. Ryan messages me. He's like, dude, what do you think about having Monty A. Melnick on the show? I'm like, how? He's like, I got a contact for him.
Yeah. Well,
like, what?
Well, sometimes you just have faith, man. You just put it out there on Facebook and sometimes they get back to you and you don't think in a million years. Sometimes we've had some amazing people by this method, but sometimes you're just kind of like, what do you got to lose? So you put it in there and you're doing something else. And all of a sudden he says, reach out to me at this email. And I'm just like, oh, this is getting interesting. I thought I would. So it's amazing, Monty, that you're here today because I've read your book years and years and years ago and seen most Ramones documentaries. And something that is always about your book and about, and we'll talk, of course, about the updated edition, but you know, you have this amazing ability to include everybody in Ramones history in your social media. And we're talking even when Clem was in the band for like 5 minutes and, you know, and of course, Richie and some of the other forgotten Ramones and your book's like that, too. Everybody out there on the road with the Ramones, it's an amazing book. And Monty, like sometimes people use books as just kind of like a way to air their dirty laundry and to just say, this is my version of the story. And here, me for 300 pages. You do not do that. You include everybody. You have all these interviews with all these people. Originally, was the book always like that? Or did you ever feel the need to tell your side of the story for 300 pages?
Well, you know, I work with so many different people and crews and bands and 8 different Ramones over the years. And I felt an oral history was good for me. You know, I'm not really a writer. And when I was first approached to do a book, I said, I'm not really a writer. I said, we'll get you a ghostwriter. So they came up with a few different people. And finally, Frank Meyer popped up, and he was great. It's unbelievable. I don't know if you know Frank Meyer, Streetwalking Cheetahs. And he's a huge Ramones fan, and he's still playing out there with a million different bands right now. And he did such a, you know, I brought him in to, and I talked to him about all the different stories and stuff, and he kind of wrote down the whole stuff too, you know. But so he did such a great job. I gave him like co-writer on the books, so, you know. But the oral history worked very well for me. You know, we called up a lot of people and talked to them on the phone, and I got a lot of different tapes from the different people we talked to over the years.
Sorry, were they talking to you directly, or were they talking to both of you? Because it seemed like sometimes Johnny would even refer to you in his reactions and comments.
Well, we're both on the phone, basically.
Okay.
I'm on the tapes, you know, together. You know, and he'd ask a question, I'd ask a question, and we'd converse that way. Was the best way to do it for me.
One of the crazy things that happens with time is that you can perceive a situation completely different than someone else perceives it, or you'll forget certain things. And then other people will remind you, hey, you don't remember. This is what happened. I think that's one of the most important reasons why you kind of have to stay friends with some people that you've known for a long time, because they're in a way the ones that not only will remind you, but sometimes will keep you honest, because they'll be the ones that like, you forget this happened. How much of that went on when you were doing the research for this book?
Well, the old joke is, if you remember, you really weren't there. That's an old hippie joke.
Of course.
I was a hippie there. I went to Woodstock, by the way.
Really? Whoa, yeah. Hang on. Don't rush over that. Let's talk a little bit about Woodstock, being at Woodstock. Do you remember Woodstock?
Oh, I was, of course not. I was. What was the question again? What would you
So when you're doing research for the book and you're asking people to recall their stories, you know, I imagine, you know, on more than one occasion, you were probably talking to people that had been, you know, in the same room as you, or maybe in the same van as you, or the same venue as you. Did you ever find that they were telling you stuff that you forgot about? Like, Monty, you don't remember when that bouncer wanted to throw this guy out, or that guy wouldn't pay at the end of the night, or, you know, this guy didn't have this on the rider, or whatever it was. I'm sure.
Well, it happens to me all the time when I meet people. They say, hey, remember this and that? I couldn't. I barely remember what I did yesterday, for going on 20, 30 years, 40 years ago, whatever, you know. Yeah, it's, you know, people tell their stories. The good thing, you know, funny about the oral history and in a book, sometimes people would say some things and people would get back to me, why'd you say that in the book? I said, I didn't say that. They said it. They said it in the book. I didn't say it.
It seems like some seminal moments in the Ramones, whether if it the starting of the band, Tommy, I think, who is a wonderful person. I met him once on the street right after he performed a country western gig at the Montreal Jazz Festival, and you would think he'd be surrounded by people, but he wasn't. In fact, he was unrecognizable. Well, you know, older in his life, if he's not walking around with a leather jacket and long hair,
and a beard and gray hair, beard, you know,
exactly.
You can look totally.
But it, you know, in the early days, what I loved about your book is that how you and Tommy kind of started this studio together. And then Tommy had the side project Ramones, which you are a musician in your own right and are quite a good bass player, for what it's worth, everybody. 30 Days Out, great band. It took a little bit of time for you to kind of get used to this Ramones sound, because, you know, you're a musician in your own right, and this is an entirely new style of playing.
Well, you know, I grew up with Tommy. I went to junior high school with Tommy, high school with Tommy. I was in several bands with Tommy well before the Ramones. And then when he brought in the, you know, then we got together in the performance studios. We designed the place, built the place, and then ran the place and had times for our own projects. I had my own bands at the time, and Tommy brought in the Ramones. But seeing them from my perspective back then was quite a jolt, because, I mean, back then they were so raw. I mean, I don't know if you've seen any early CBGB's footage of those Ramones. It was so, you know, if I was coming from band at Three-Port Harmonies, I really complained of instruments quite well, and so me first seeing them, it was I was a shock for me. You know, I tell you the truth. In the early years, I didn't. That the first couple of times I saw them, I didn't like them. You know what I mean?
Mm.
But I, you know, then they started doing showcases, and they asked me to run the sound for them, and I started running the sound for them, and they got better and better because they played a lot. They really, you know, they played Performance Studios quite a bit, then played CBGBs over 70 times. That's where they built their whole persona and they learned their whole stage presence and their instruments and the whole thing. At CBGBs, you know, it was a really great place to be at the time. I was lucky to be there for them to do that there, you know?
It's also fun when you think that every generation, there's certain bands that have this icon status, and the Ramones are one of them. Every kid that's going through a rock and roll phase, the rite of passage is, you know, you end up getting a Ramones t-shirt, you get a Black Flag t-shirt. There's these things that it's almost become a brand. It is a brand. Is it weird for you to see that and remember those few shows that you saw when they really didn't even come on your radar as being good, to see how much that has endured and has become like a part of pop culture and a rite of passage for most kids that are rebelling?
Well, it's amazing. I mean, they're so much bigger now than they were with when they were alive. They're the yeah. four of them, unfortunately, the four originals have passed away. Yeah. And you know, I see how much bigger they are now. And that's a shame that they couldn't see what the status they are now back then, you know? Well, I got a joke to tell many times. Is I say, if they were Ramones were this big when I was working for them, I would have gotten a big raise, you know? I made a lot more money. For God's sakes, it's huge. Everybody says Stones, Beatles, Ramones in the same breath to me. And yeah. I'm flabbergasted. It's great. It's amazing.
There's not a doubt in my mind that had they all been alive right now, if they felt like it, they could go on a stadium tour like that.
Yeah.
Like they're indoctrinated not only into pop culture, like when they were alive, I'm very aware they were more like a cult band. And it's fascinating. Like, you don't know what you got until it's gone. I think that's what the expression is. But it must have been so interesting to know that the guys were making great music and you guys were putting on amazing productions considering your limited budgets and what an efficient train you were. But at the same time, the cycle of, well, just based on your book and stuff, the cycle of disappointment it must have had, where everybody, Joey, each record you put out, Joey would think, this is going to be the one that changes everything. And then what was it like to endure that? Did you ever have hopes that the next record, all of a sudden, you'd have that big, amazing moment in the movie where everything comes together?
Well, yeah. I mean, the records progressively got better and better and better. And then they did different things and established themselves better over the years with different records. And, you know, they just kept on saying, look, if we – the U.S. radio was kill them. I mean, the U.S. they just couldn't get on the United States radio here. It's a shame, you know. I mean, overseas they were fairly big, you know, in Europe and all that. We play big venues. Of course, South America, they got the taste of what it was like to be a huge, major act. You know, I mean,
right.
You know, they were like gods. They still are. I mean, Richie goes down there. CJ, Marky, they all play down there, and they're just treated like gods now, you know. And when we're there, when they were, the original group was there, it was like amazing to see that. And then they come back to the United States, and we couldn't get on the radio. And that's why they kept on over the years trying different producers. They say, this, you know, Tommy and Ed was great. They produced terrific records, and they went to Phil Spector and John Lafleur and Graham Gouldman. And, oh, my God. I mean, they just kept saying, well, maybe the next one, the radio play. Maybe the next one, be a hit, you know? It was just very frustrating. But they kept on trying. That's the thing. They didn't give up.
And I think what really what helped the Ramones was, you know, was television and was video. Even though they might not have gotten a ton of play on the video stations, they did have an impression when you would see them. So I think anything that they did video wise, any kind of love that they got from MTV or any other video channel anywhere else in the world, definitely helped this band. Because I know that when I was a kid and I would see, you know, visuals of the Ramones, there was an impact there. The music was one thing, but then you see them and that's a whole other thing. It's another layer to it.
Well, we had problems with MTV. We did a lot for them in the beginning. And then they abandoned us at times. And then the psychotherapy video they banned because it was too violent. Now it's like nothing these days, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But they banned that video and we had trouble getting more airplay, even on MTV. And we did a lot for them. You know, we did a lot of different things for them over the years. It was a shame.
You mentioned that they worked with a lot of producers. Just to say, we also brought up, like, you know, you You were there. You have the most interesting. Everybody out there, you got to buy this book, On the Road with the Ramones. It's just, it's a one of a kind experience when you just hear everyone's take. It's so interesting to hear people not argue, but have conflicting memories of history as you go. But you mentioned a lot of producers. Was there an era of the Ramones that you particularly enjoy that you're like, oh, I like it when they lean in this direction?
No, each album has its own little thing that I liked. You know what I mean? Because they each producer and each album, they tried a little different little things here, little things there, different type of songs and stuff like that. Although they, you know, people come to me and they say, what's your favorite Ramones song? That's a good one for me. I really do have a favorite Ramones song. Any ideas what you think that would be?
Oh God, I'm not entirely sure, but I'm sure
it's on the End of the Century album.
End of the Century, okay. Mm-hmm. Oh,
Phil Spector produced album.
Oh yeah, no, of course. I'm thinking of End of the Century because there's a lot of different. Of course, Rock and Roll High School is a good one, but it's kind of unique that Baby I Love You is like, you know, a total Phil Spector. I don't even think the guy's played on that track, but
is it Baby I Love You?
No. you give up? I'll tell you.
Yeah, tell us.
All the Way. Do you know why?
No, tell me.
I've written into the song. Marty's driving me crazy. It's like thinking in the Navy. So I'm in a Ramones song. Of course, that's my favorite Ramones song.
Okay, Monty, you know, Jason is Jason was in a very well-known new metal band called Slaves on Dope. And I've done okay. And I've done my share of Ramones covers over the years. But, you know, everybody remembers who is in the band, but not everybody remembers who's backstage. Another thing I love about your book is you really highlight and give a voice to all these people that killed themselves to make sure this band happened. Was that the plan the entire time?
Yes. I mean, people, you know, people go to a show and they see the band on stage. Mm-hmm. You know, they're up there partying. They don't realize there's a foundation underneath the band. There's the crew too. Mm. Now, if the band doesn't have a good sound man, they're not going to sound good. A good light man, they're not going to look good. A lousy guitar roadie, they're going to sound, guitars are going to be out of tune. A drum roadie, all these people, there's layers. There's a foundation underneath the band that I try to bring out, because I'm being a tour manager, I'm being one of the crew, one of the roadies. I try to bring that out and point that out to people that, you know, this is what's underneath the band. When you go see a band, it's more than just the band on stage playing. There's other people involved you might not see, but that's going to affect the whole show, you know?
Yeah.
That's what I try to bring out in my book.
And it's so true, because there's so many things that go into a touring, a touring band. A band like Motorhead were notorious for writing, you know, We Are the Road Crew, like a song written for the crew. I mean, there's not many bands that would do that, but it's, you know, and Bob Seger would say that. And there's always references to the crew and how important they are.
Speaking of Motorhead, he's wrote the greatest, one of best Ramones songs.
Yeah.
Ramones, R-A-M-O-N-E-S.
Yes, Ramones. Yeah,
he's a great guy. He got very good, very friendly with the band. And it was,
oh, Lemmy.
Lemmy.
I don't want to make this about me, but I had the pleasure of being involved with Motorhead and with Lemmy at a very, 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 at one point when I moved to Los Angeles, their manager at the time put me in charge of watering Lemmy's plants when he was away. Because Lemmy had this little one room apartment that he lived on, right off Sunset Boulevard. And because he didn't believe in having more than a one room apartment, because you can't live in more than one room at a time. So why would I have more than one room? Perfect sense. But a lot of people forget how much of an incredibly prolific songwriter Lemmy was. I mean, he wrote Ozzy's biggest hit, Mama, I'm Coming Home. You know, like the guy is. So it's funny that you say that.
And what a great person, a wonderful person to meet in person, talk to him.
And this is the thing. There's so many bands that, you know, kind of, I don't want to say leapfrogged over the Ramones, but there were bands that built on the Ramones foundation that ended up becoming huge, but they always paid respect to them, whether they did a cover. And that's the one thing, that they always were a band's band, and they become more and more of a band's band. Like, you know, so many bands will cite them along with the Misfits as bands that, you know, that lay the foundation for the music that they make.
Well, I think that's the legacy of the Ramones, basically. Right. You know, kind of like Johnny Appleseed, who go out when he would plant apples trees all over the place. In the early years, the Ramones would go out, play these small little dinky clubs in small cities, and Europe and whatever. And all these kids would see them. And they say, hey, if they can do that, it's not that difficult. Just, you know, you got to be proficient and you don't have to be a Clapton or anything like that, or a great drum solos or something. So the Ramones playing there, and all these bands give them credit from seeing them early years and forming bands. So I get that's the legacy of the Ramones. And then later on, they all gave them credit. I'm amazed. Like in the Lollapalooza tour, it was in 96 when they finally got on the Lollapalooza tour. It was Metallica, Soundgarden, Rancid. So I'm putting the, I put the Ramones on stage, and all of a sudden I'm looking at the side of the stage and all these bands are standing there.
Yeah.
And they said they were huge fans, and they became very friendly with the band. They said, listen, we saw you guys when we were, you know, kids, and they formed these bands, you know, and they became super huge. And, you know, it's amazing. You know, you too, with that song he wrote, Miracle of Joey Ramone or something. He was a huge Ramones fan. They started off as a punk band first too, you know?
Yeah. So it's really cool to see that they're part of the DNA of rock and roll, and especially for the future generations that came after them.
In fact, in Ohio, once we played the outside of Columbus year early on, and these kids came back and said, "Hey, we're Metallica. We love you." They were the kids, you know. And now they're just, that's a little frustrating with the Ramones. Everybody opened up for the Ramones,
yeah,
and became so much bigger than Blondie, Talking Heads, B-52s, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They all opened up for the Ramones, and they became megastars, and poor Ramones are hacking away, you know?
Yeah. Is it the kind of thing for you that, like all those bands you just mentioned, are there friendships with some of those bands still? Like,
oh yeah, we're friendly with them.
Like,
most, yeah.
And is it still like that for you today? Like, is it the kind of thing where you can, you know, if Blondie are playing, you'll go down and see them? Or,
well, you
know,
yeah, like, Talking Heads, I'm friendly with Chris and Tina pretty well. And,
yeah.
Chris from Blondie, I talked to him once in a while and stuff like that. Yeah.
The Talking Heads just put out, A24 just did a reissue and a remaster of Stop Making Sense.
Yeah, you should go see it if you got a chance.
I did.
Oh, good.
I went with my son. I saw it when it first came out. I'm 53, so I saw it when I was a kid at the Repertory Cinema. But to see it again and to be sitting there with my 19-year-old and him, you know, coming along with me, it was just something else to see that. And it reminded me, you know, of that time, you know, when all those bands were coming out of the city and they were just all going, they're all very different, but there were so many bands that were really setting the table for what was going to come in the next in the next decades, you know, and on the forefront of it all, but in very different directions.
Yeah. I saw the movie originally when it came out years and years ago. And then Chris and Tina invited me to a screening a month or so ago. And
doesn't it look and sound great?
Amazing movie. I'm amazed that, David is incredible. Yeah. David's like, he's from another world. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It's something to see.
I gotta say, we've been talking about the influence of the Ramones and all these bands that love them. And everybody can argue that, like, Dee Dee, Tommy invented a drum style just to, you know, make the drums make sense in the band as it was developing. But off the stage, there is probably more dysfunction and distinct personalities within this band than there is in five seasons of a reality TV show of people screaming and arguing, but not even screaming.
It wasn't that bad.
No, it wasn't that bad. Okay, because to me, my perception and all the documentaries, it seemed like, oh God, it must have been so tense at all times. But
No. I mean, if they see the early shows in CBGBs, they were just learning their stuff. So, you know, they would stop and Tommy said, stop, come on, let's do this, let's do that. You know, I mean, that was the early years. Later on, they, you know, they realized, I mean, this thing with Johnny and Joey, it's, you know, they wouldn't be together for so long if they were going to kill each other, you know, or fight. They just avoided socializing, you know what I mean?
Right.
They had to talk about the set list, and they had to talk about what's going on the album, or what the songs and stuff like that. It wasn't a lot. They kept separate, you know. But it wasn't, you know, people make like they were fighting all the time, and they wouldn't talk to each other at all. But no, it wasn't that bad. It was, you know, tense at times, but not that, you know, as bad as people make it up to. You know, think over the years that things get spun differently, you know.
Gotcha. There's been a lot of talk about a possible, for years, there's been a lot of talk about a Ramones movie or a TV show or something or other.
Well, I'm sure you saw all the stuff on the internet, what's going on now.
Please tell our listeners.
Tell me.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, when the Ramones retired in 96, Johnny and Joey were Ramones Productions. They were the ones in charge, you know.
Right.
So Joey passed away and gave his part of the Ramones. There's 50-50 between them to his mother. Okay. She died, gave it to his brother, Mickey Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Mitch Hyman, Mickey Lee. Johnny passed away and gave it to Linda's, who he married. Of course, Linda and Joey thing, that's where that whole thing was tense between Joey and Johnny. But they don't get along very well, unfortunately. You know, over the years and years, they just can't get to mesh together, you know. They both do interesting things. I mean, Linda puts these great tribute shows in L.A. I don't know if you've seen any of them. Hollywood Forever Cemetery, she puts the tribute shows together.
I've heard of them.
Really great stuff. I think she's going to have another one coming up in June. And Mickey does his little thing, birthday bashes in town, Bowery Electric. But they just cannot get together on anything, basically. And so there was a movie, a CBGB's movie out a while ago, which wasn't very good. Linda didn't like the way Johnny was portrayed, and she wouldn't let them put in any Ramones songs. So in that movie, actually, there's no Ramones, so it's just Joey Ramone songs.
Mm-hmm. You
know? Which is a shame. So this new movie coming up, you know, to get the Ramones rights, Linda, you know, Mickey's suing Linda suing Mickey. They're saying bad things, you know, Mick just says bad things about Linda, and et cetera, et cetera. It's very, very tense. So that whole movie is like up in the air right now.
It's crazy when you think that, you know, like we were mentioning, this is a big business. You know, at the end of the day, the brand becomes a big business, and whoever the rights are passed on to, you know, depending on who it is and how they feel about it, it can really change, you know, how the band's represented. So if someone like you, who was there from, you know, ground zero through the whole thing, when you see all this kind of stuff happening, I guess there's a part of you that's just like, can't we all just get along?
Yeah, that's a nice bumper sticker. It's, you know, it's been happening. It's been happening for years and years and years. It's not just something that popped up today or yesterday.
Yeah, no, but I mean, it's got to be frustrating in a way, because I'm sure you'd love to see a proper tribute, maybe like a biopic of them, with, like, told properly.
Yeah, you know? I'd like to see a Ramones picture. I just want Edward Norton to play me in the movie or something like that.
I'm glad you said that, Monty. That's, first of all, that's a great idea, because I think he'd actually knock it out of the park.
Yeah, but that's actually great casting.
It was some post I saw, and actually the whole reason why I actually ended up reaching out to you, because I thought about it, was I saw this post that about the movie and stuff, and it was apparently Pete Davidson was supposed to play Joey.
He's picked to play Joey.
Yeah, right? he's picked to play Joey. And I'm like, and it's based on Mickey Lee's book, I Slept with Joey Ramone, which, you know, has been received by fans and friends with, you know, mixed emotions. But I responded to this post. I never respond to any of this crap, because I'm like, I don't want people I don't know and don't care about bothering me for the next few days. Well, I think you're wrong. But I just wrote, you know, if you were going to do this, first of all, I wouldn't do a movie. I would do a miniseries, because there's way too much story about four people to wrap up in an hour and a half, 2 hours. It's impossible. Second of all, why don't they base this based on Monty A. Melnick's book?
You're the one that wrote that.
That was me.
Very nice. Yeah.
It is such a more well-rounded version of history, and he's the person that knew everybody. Yeah. So it's not just the brother's version of Joey or the, you know, the widower's version of Johnny. It's a much more, like, you would want someone a little less emotionally involved with one side to make sure that they tell the story.
Right about a miniseries, because there's so many, I mean, 8 different Ramones over the years and 22 years and so much stuff there, you know. But
I would do one per decade.
Any producers out there, I'm open, but I'm going to have the same problems.
You know, it's funny when you look at iconic rock bands, and, you know, Led Zeppelin's another one. Hammer of the Gods was a great book. But the book that I really liked was Richard Cole's book. You know, he's another guy that was, you know, Richard Cole's another real famous road manager, like that was there. I mean, that was there, you know. Stairway to Heaven was a great, his book is phenomenal. It really is a different perspective when you're the road manager, because you get to see, you get to really stand back and observe everything, you know, and you're not necessarily caught in the dynamic of the band. There's always power struggles in bands, but when you're a road manager, you have to kind of make everybody happy.
Over the years, I worked up to tour manager.
Yeah, but still, I mean, you still were responsible for this you know, rolling circus.
I always say that I had to deal with a crazy band, but also crazy crew on top of that. So it's a triple amount of people.
And then the crazy local promoters. And
a lot of people that the tour manager or road manager has to deal with. People don't realize. That's why I try to put in the book what I had to deal with over the years, you know.
So if you could give, just give us one story from the book, one crazy story that people would, that really might be a great, you know, a great worm to get people on the hook to read this.
Well, all right. I think I told this a couple of times. In Spain, we played a bullring, big outdoor bullring, you know, and on my rider, I put some pages of my rider in the book so I can see that there's a stage plot that says I need a barrier with security guards in front. So the promoter, the bullring said, yeah, don't worry, we'll have security for you. The show's it's about to start, and they march. The army comes out in front, army guys with machine guns. I said, that's the best security I ever had, I'll tell you that. And I don't know what they thought about. That was pretty crazy, you know.
That's insane.
Speaking of craziness in the books and stuff, I want to ask you before, because you had mentioned Edward Norton playing you, which I think Edward Norton is such a strong actor. Like, they're gonna pile on the drama if they make this. They're going to pile up in the drama. Like Joey will be, you know, there'll be many tear scenes and Johnny is going to be kicking things. Like, it's what movies do. But what actors do you think would play great Ramones? And it doesn't have to be particularly right now. It could be an actor from the 70s movie, 70s, 60s, 90s. Anybody that you ever thought that the guys kind of reminded you of in a cinematic sense.
I can't really. I'm not good at that. Besides playing me, you know.
You got Edward. You got Ed Norton pegged.
Yeah, I got that down. There's several. What do you think? I mean, who's the
Paul Dano, Joey Ramone, Paul Dano, 150%. As soon as I saw him in The Girl Next Door, and now he's a big movie star, and he's been in There Will Be Blood and the Batman. He played a Riddler. I always thought Paul Dano would have been the best Joey Ramone ever.
Maybe he's
aged out of it now. I don't know, but I just think Paul Dano had the build, the look, the talent. Just if anyone was going to crush Joey Ramone, it would have been him.
Interesting.
Yeah,
to look him up.
I just wanted to ask you this one thing. There was the John Bravado's documentary on Punk, and I don't know if you, I'm sure you heard about it. There was a screening that happened in Los Angeles where they had Henry Rollins, John Lydon, Markey, and a bunch of people on a panel, and it got really heated between Markey and John.
I saw that.
Now I know, you know, knowing you, from what I know, how you respect so many, all the members of the Ramones as being part of the history and the legacy. How did you feel when you saw that exchange? Did you feel for Markey?
Yeah, I think Markey said some good things there and stood up and gave it to him.
Yeah, because it got
he's pretty, he can be annoying a lot, you know. I mean, that's, you know, you gotta, if you're there, if you could say something like Jim Markey did, that's great.
Yeah, because it was a strange one, but I mean,
almost came to fisticuffs there.
I know. And but the thing about Lydon is that he'll come up and he'll say whatever he wants to say, and he's never been apologetic about it.
Yeah, definitely.
So I imagine, you know, when you get that whole the argument about where did punk originate from? So many people will say England, some people will say New York. In your opinion, what was the first experience you had with punk? Was it the Ramones?
Yeah.
Definitely, right?
Definitely. Well, you know, I grew up with Tommy and then in Performance Studios. That's the band I saw and worked with mostly there, you know, and at CBGB's. And they didn't really, in the beginning, they didn't like the word punk. You know, they just wanted to be called rock and roll band. Yeah. They didn't like the name punk.
Some people will go back to say, you know, it was the MC5. It was the Who. So
Iggy.
It's like Iggy. Exactly. So it's crazy how some people will argue about that. But at the end of the day, no matter what, everybody influences everybody.
Yes.
And for you, who would you say was the biggest influence for the Ramones?
All those people just mentioned, MC5, Iggy. It's, you know, people along those lines they listen to. You know, luckily in New York, we had the Fillmore East here
right.
when we were kids. So we, Tommy and I went to a lot of shows. We saw a lot of different bands, all different, you know, Sam and Dave, Mothers of Invention, The Who, the Jimi Hendrix we saw a lot. I mean, we saw so many different types of acts, not just one specific thing. And Johnny, too, went to see a lot of different things. So it wasn't just one specific thing, a type of music. So when we were young, we saw a lot of different music. You know, that's what got into the Ramones.
It's amazing how we, you know, as musicians, you too, Monty, you're great, like I said before, a great bass player. It's amazing how, despite the fact we can love bands and love music, it doesn't necessarily mean we're going to play like that. But something that amazed me, and it's sad, and it's also at this, it made me sad, and it made me happy. I saw a video called Johnny Ramone's Last Interview Ever, and it's kind of I think he knows he's dying. I think he's even wearing a wig. But he's kind of like, it seems like the weight of the world is off his shoulders. And every other video and every other, the way he spoke prior to this, there was definitely kind of, you know, I'm putting on this front. I got to hold this together. Everybody needs to be intimidated by me because this is the way this has to be. Mm-hmm. And there seemed to be like this relief that when the band finished, he could finally live in LA and become this rock star and hang out with famous people and just kind of enjoy his success. And in the last interview ever, what just moved me was he was mentioning, oh, what are your favorite bands? He's like, oh, my favorite American bands, the Beach Boys. I think Pet Sounds was their best album, but my favorite American band is The Doors. And I almost dropped my cup. Goodness. Because I was like, Johnny Ramone likes the band that plays the 8-minute songs with all this crazy metal shit that gets complicated and all over the place. I almost found that I saw Johnny Ramone as a planet and then discovered he's a universe. Like I'm like, he was about to die.
Well, you know, Robbie Krieger came on stage and played with the Ramones.
Wow.
In L.A.
Yeah,
really,
yeah.
That Ramone, that Doors song that they put on the album there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then we opened up for Densmore's City Lights or something at a group.
Yeah.
We opened up for him in Colorado early on when he had a band. So there's kind of a little 6 degrees of Doors and Ramones here.
that's incredible. And you know,
yeah, they have Krieger on stage with the Ramones. That's insane, you know.
Yeah, but apparently Johnny, because of rereading your book, I was just so thrilled to find out, like, yeah, and Johnny played with the Red Hot Chili Peppers on stage once, and Metallica, and all this other stuff. Like, really, for a guy that I was under the impression my entire life was this stern, refusing to change even his haircut and his clothes type guy, to be so open-minded and just to enjoy all that in the last few years of his life, it's kind of a beautiful ending to it.
Well, that's also that he realized that they kind of idolized him, you know, mm-hmm. what I mean?
Yeah.
So to have, you know, him on stage with them was kind of a little reversible thing there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I really want to thank you for taking the time today to chat with us. Where can people find the book and what print? Because I know that this, yeah. I believe it's in its second print now because you've added.
Well, it's a third printing, but this is Amazon.com is where you can get it. It's get the bonus edition.
Okay.
What's in the bonus edition?
I had 40 more pages at the end. I talk about, actually, over the years, the first edition I came out with, then the second edition I had. You know, things happen in Ramones over the years. So, and then third edition, that people pass away. And so this last one, I put in a bunch of stuff I left out of the first couple of editions, you know, about 40 pages. Well, the lucky thing about the book is it's the publisher originally let me put in a lot of images, photos, pass, posters, tour passes, itineraries, over 300 images, which is unusual. Books usually like text, some pictures in the middle, text.
Yeah.
My book's like tons of pictures. And I was very lucky. The art director they got for the original book was terrific at the way they laid it out. So I was happy to get all the stuff that I had sitting in a room into the book, you know?
Yeah. Immortalizing it in a way. But in a world where everyone's obsessed with just digital this and screens, everybody out there, I cannot tell you enough of why you should get Monty's book is that it's a large book. It's a coffee table book. But at the same time, like Monty said, it's full of all these beautiful images and backstage passes and everything. But I think it brings back the importance of owning something physically. That's what your book represents to me, because it's first of all, being large, but second of all, just as a hardcore Ramones collector or fan out there, this book is unique. It's something you got to have, and also at the same time, it's special. And you put your heart and soul into it. And clearly it's the Ramones world. It's not just what you think about the Ramones world. You could have did that, but instead you said, no, you invited everybody to the party and everyone had something to say. It's amazing.
The first couple editions, an ebook came out on it. Don't get the ebook because they didn't do a good job. It can't capture the book in an ebook. Unfortunately, no. The bonus edition is not an ebook yet, but it's a regular book. So just go for the bonus edition. That's the Ramones in red on it, you know. Red.
Yeah.
So it says bonus edition over here.
The real book is bigger than that, ladies and gentlemen. Just
I was going to say, wow,
look at this book. It's
the size of this book.
Ryan, you don't know what big means.
Here's the big book. There we go.
There you go. Look how thick it is. Oh, geez, that sounds weird.
Monty, thanks for taking the time. Oh, last question.
Let's have some more.
Cool. Really? Please. No, is that okay?
It's fine. I don't want to keep you. So
okay,
I'm fine.
Okay.
I got another 2 minutes. No, go ahead.
All right. Okay, cool.
I'm fine.
Montreal or New York bagels?
New York. Montreal bagels? they made bagels there.
All right, Monty, the Ramones, gotta love them, but they're a bunch of nutcases. Any particular funny story that you hold near and dear to your heart about just getting it done when you have a road crew and a band full of psychopaths, but at the same time you endured? What's a day on the road that you particularly are proud of because you were you and no one else could have did it?
I can't say that. It's gone on 20 years. There's so many things. That's why I put it in a book. I really can't. Right now, I can't pick one thing out, you know. I tell a silly joke about we're driving around and it's the early, mid-70s or something. They just came, you know, started playing and they were driving around Texas about 4 hours, 5 hours in the van, and they stopped for gas at a convenience store gas station. So pull in and they stumble out, you know, looking like, you know, Joey and they're all just stumbling around after 4 hours in the van, you know, and where they looked was, and this is rural Texas, you know. So I fill up and then I go to pay for the gas, and the woman behind the counter says, sure, nice of you taking care of those retarded boys. I said, yes, ma'am, that's my job. I told this too many times, and I'll tell it again. But
if you had to describe to somebody today, what does a regular day look like to you? Like, what do you do now?
Looking for a podcast to talk on.
are you still living? Are you living in the city? Like, what part of the world?
Yeah, I live in Queens. I have a part time job at Queens Theater. It's a theater in Queens, and I do a little in house managing there part time. That keeps me semi-busy. And
then, is it a live venue?
Yeah, it's you know, in the movie Men in Black, there's the towers and the Unisphere, there's a theater underneath the towers.
Okay.
Well, if it's a live venue place, I do a little part-time work there, in-house managing stuff, keeps me, you know, here and there.
A lot of bands coming through there still?
Well, it's not bands, and more like plays and dance companies, and Charo's playing there.
Charo. Really. Do you ever have anybody that comes into the office and goes, wait a minute, are you that Monty A. Melnick?
Yeah, people spot me there.
It's crazy.
That's why I carry these little cards around with me. I give them, like, hey, here's a little souvenir.
Oh, nice. I love it.
Yeah, and all the Ramones fans are like, I was under the impression there was no Melnicks based on the signage.
That's what all the, you want me to tell that story?
Absolutely.
Sure, do it.
All right. So one day I'm walking around and I'm going to the crew room. And on the door of the crew room, there's a sign, no Melnicks. Like, I'm not allowed into the crew. Okay, fine. It's funny, ha-ha, crew. You know. All of a sudden, later on, people come to me and say, we were in this club, and then somebody wrote no Melnicks on the ceiling. And then no Melnicks on the door. The crew was going around writing no Melnicks all over the place. You know? And they thought it was funny. And actually, the band thought it was funny, too. So In the movie I Want to Live, they put, if you watch it, there's one shot of Times Square where the big sign on Times Square, they flash Noel Melnick. They actually paid to put that up, Noel Melnick, on the Times Square sign. The band thought it was funny, you know. But people come to me and say, what's the Noel Melnick here? I said, what's the crew's idea of a joke? And I'm not allowed into the originally into the their crew room, you know.
I think that's one of the things that that touring musicians and touring crew develop over so many years together is you have your own language. You have little things that you can say to each other, maybe just a glance, one word, and it brings you right back to where all that stuff originally, you know, happened and where it started from. Like the Noel Melnick thing.
I like to say it's yes, Melnick now.
You have the final say. it's really been a pleasure to chat with you today. Honestly, it's been really nice. And thank you for accepting. Ryan is a huge, huge fan and has absorbed the book many times. I'm going to pick up a copy. And I just love the authenticity of your storytelling. It's just great to see, because there's not many people that can say they were there when, and those are the people you want to try to talk to.
Well, you up in Canada?
Yeah. We're in Montreal.
Oh, okay.
That's why we're asking the bagel thing.
Oh, how are Montreal bagels? I've never had one.
They're great. They're different. They've got a much bigger hole. They don't have as much of a surface for schmear. So you know, you get some people.
It's a story. And when we played Toronto in '77, there was a festival. We were opening up for Ted Nugent and Aerosmith or something like that. And the early on, the promoters didn't know where to put the Ramones. So they stuck us on these crazy bills, you know.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then, unfortunately, '77, the 30,000 people didn't want to see the Ramones. They were throwing. Talk about food. I think they were throwing some bagels on stage, but they throw food on stage. It might have been some bagels in the middle of the set. And they got pissed off. And so there's a picture out there, Dee Dee and Johnny giving the bird to 30,000 people that walked off stage. So fuck you guys, you know. But that was just food. But later on, when we opened up early on for like Black Sabbath audience, that was dangerous because they weren't throwing food. They were throwing like batteries and coins.
Yeah.
An ice pick actually came up on stage. Early on, the metal people didn't know the Ramones at the time, and we were had all these gigs with four shows opening up for the Black Sabbath, you know, and their audience didn't want to hear anything with the Ramones, you know.
Yeah, yeah,
it's crazy. A little Canadian story there.
Canadians not as nice as the stereotypes would portray.
But one of the first places we went out of in New York was up to Canada and to play up there. We always had great audiences up there.
I've heard CJ tell me in person, not he was on our show when he was playing with the Gimme Gimme. So he didn't say it then, but he did tell me in person a few years ago. I always ask him, I'm like, why did you guys play so fast in the 90s where the songs were almost unrecognizable because they're so quick? And according to CJ, and this is not written down or anything, but according to CJ, he said, Johnny and Mark, you wanted to get the fuck out of there faster, so they played the songs fast. can you collaborate that story?
Maybe. That's possible. I mean, it did speed up. I mean, Richie actually sped them up quite a bit, too.
Yeah. So.
Speaking of Richie, did he actively decide to not be part of the book? Because I'm about to read his book, and we might talk to him in a few weeks. But I was worried about repetition of the information I was going to learn from your book until I realized that he didn't participate in it. Was that?
At the time, he wasn't talking to me, but I straightened things out with him later on, you know.
Well, I'm really glad that things are straightened out. It's, I think it's a very unique part. I love those three albums, those three Richie albums. I think are so cool and so creative. And at first, when I was a kid, all I wanted to hear was the first four albums. And then later on in life, I just embraced. I'm like, oh my God, too Tough to Die and Animal Boy or like Halfway to Sanity are such cool albums. And the synthesizers are actually amazing. And I love the corniness and the 80s-ness. There's this one music video you guys did with it's a parody of I think Live Aid and Rock Aid or one of those where it's called Something to Believe In. And that song means so much to me.
I'm in that.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course you're in that. And I also saw you're in Rock and Roll High School, of course, but in Something to Believe In, you had all these other like people like Weird Al and stuff.
Oh yeah.
Like,
that was cool the way they strung all these different people into it.
Yeah.
Speaking of Noel Melnick, if you look at the beginning of the Sedated video, I'm in it, and I come out, and it's just very fast. But right in the beginning, I walk out, somebody comes out with a No Melnick sign and chases me off. You can see that, No Melnick. So talk about the No Melnicks there. I made it into that. That's what they, you know, the band loved to keep the No Melnicks going, you know?
I love it. The inside jokes. That's what makes it special, because it's the stuff. And when it gets out into the public, people know what it is. But it's great when you do that stuff and only you know about it.
And another thing, if you look at the video where they're in the graveyard,
Pet Cemetery.
Pet Cemetery. My mind. They're being lowered slowly. Look to the right. They put a Melnick's tombstone in the back there. But here's this weird thing. Joey's buried in New Jersey, cemetery in Jersey. So you drive up the road and he's like three rows back. The first stone is a Melnick's.
Wow.
And then you go through two. So look at the Melnick stone and go two back and you'll find Joey's gravesite.
It's crazy.
Holy mackerel. Every time I go there, it's like weird.
Well, as long as it's not yours.
Yeah. As long as you're not walking over your grave, it's all good.
Who knows? I might be a ghost.
Yeah. I know Melnick ghost. Everybody out there, you'll learn in Monty's book that Monty went above and beyond as a road manager. Of course, you and Joey had a very if it wasn't for you kind of watching Joey had some issues. And back then, people didn't know a lot about OCD and stuff, but
anything about it in the beginning, people thought it was like out of his mind until they diagnosed it, you know.
But it's but you actively made sure that the Ramones can function without Joey being there. But I don't think in the world we kind of celebrate the people that kind of get the people on stage enough. So that's another reason why I like your book and like learning more about that. And Jason, what you're talking about, the Led Zeppelin biography as written by their road manager. I read that one too. It's absolutely awesome. Now that everybody knows so much more about OCD and now everyone's more about mental awareness and everything, do you think the Ramones story being popularized might actually be better for people who are kind of like struggling on the road? Like, do you think like it should be told more as a, not a cautionary tale, but as kind of like an optimistic, like they aren't just accessible as players. You could be in a band too, but you can be in a band if you have OCD. If you're bipolar, if you're, manic depressive, or if you're a hard ass.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Joey, where would he be if he wasn't in the band,
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It really gave him an opportunity to become huge and famous and great and have him come out. That's, I didn't write my book until he passed away because I felt I didn't want to write about all that. And him, I was good friends with him, and that me doing it, I didn't feel like I could do it. So I waited. Unfortunately, passed away, and then I was able to put the book out.
Again, thank you so much for taking the time. Really means a lot, and I encourage people to go check out the book, On the Road with the Ramones. It's something that's going into the Amazon cart right away for me. not only on Ryan's recommendation, but on hearing just you talk about it. So, thanks again, man. Really,
well, thank you for me being on the Rockman Show. Gabba gabba hey.
Thanks, man.
And here we are in the olden days, happy golden days of yours, where at the end of the show, we reflect upon it. And sometimes we record these things a little long after the fact, talk about our week or whatever. But like this literally just happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I'm still vibrating. And it's
fun because we've had, this is the second, this is the second brush with the Ramones that we've had. The first one was when we interviewed Spike Slosson from Me First and the Gimme Gimmes, who just happened to surprise us with CJ Ramone being next to him. And now we've got Monty. So, it's
nice to know this one was coming, I was,
you weren't anticipating.
CJ was like a shark attack. It's like, what? Awesome. What? A shark, but still.
So, I that was a great conversation and it was fun to see you, really know your shit. And, and I gotta be honest, like he was not rushing us off.
No.
We could have probably spoken another hour, but I think being the polite Canadians that we are, after about 35, 40 minutes, I'm like, he must have something better to do than talk to these two losers. But he was just wonderful. Great guy. And I have a funny feeling he's the kind of guy that we'll keep in touch with and maybe have him on again.
I think that's the best thing about leaving wanting more, especially, or leaving something in the tank, because, there might be other people in that universe coming on the show at one point. And if that's the case, it's I kind of like having those episodes where you team people up, especially yeah. ones that you wouldn't expect, because those are fun. Like, for instance, if we want to look back, I think one of the strengths of the Rockman Power Hour is, you know, those amazing episodes like you did with the producer and the bassist of Faith No More. Like, that was so
cool.
That was
one of my favorites.
I'm not even a Faith No More fan, and I'm like, I know I'm only getting this information here because it's them right now.
Well, that's it. It's like, you know, you get the story from the horse's mouth, and that's literally how you feel when you're talking to Monty. You're like, no one's going to know it as well as him. He was in the fucking van.
Yeah. You
know, he was in the van. He was backstage at the venue. He was the guy settling up at the end of the night. He was there on the days off. Like, he saw everything, you know? So it's pretty cool to talk to him. I have to say, that was really, really rad.
And something I got to say about Monty, just being like, clearly, you know, this is an opportunity where he could have wrote 300 pages all about how he did everything and how he should get more recognition. Cause let's face it, in a lot of rock and roll autobiographies, that's the majority of all the things you hear, especially people associated with the band. But this is a book that honors the band. And the fact that Monty finally had a voice to say something, he chose to invite everybody else as well and all share in this limelight. And that says a lot about a person.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just goes to show that this is why Monty was able to keep that circus together, because it wasn't all about him. A lot of lesser people always try to turn the camera on themselves and feel self-validation for the hard work that no one knows they do. Yet at the same time, he just did his job.
Yeah.
Instead of partying and overindulging and like doing all these drugs and fucking everything up for everyone, he was getting up early. He was going to bed late. He was getting up early, and he was making sure it stayed on track.
Yeah.
And, I don't think I have enough personality to be as selfless as Monty A. Melnick is, but here we go.
Great having him on. Hope we get to talk to him again soon. And that was fun. That was really, really fun. Again, we'll have to thank our friends over at Studio House Designs for making us look fresh every week. We always look good. And of course, our sponsor, Heartbeat Hot Sauce, the heartbeat of the Rockman Power Hour. This is the jalapeno that I love as well. And you can get them over at heartbeathotsauce.com. Use our promo code ROCKMAN20 and get 20% off your entire order. And you can use that code over and over and over again. Thanks to our producer, Julia Kajerski. Thank you to my co-host, Ryan Stick. And thanks to all of you. And please, if you are enjoying the Rockman Power Hour, like, subscribe, do all that fun stuff. And that way you will be kept abreast on when we drop new material. And until next week, and I find another creative way to use the word abreast, we'll see you next time on the Rockman Power Hour.